These are some excerpts from The North Briton, written by John Wilkes, Charles Churchill, and others, about opposition to arbitrary power in 1763. It begins like this. The preliminary articles of peace, ending the Seven Years' War, were such as have drawn the contempt of mankind on our wretched negotiators. All our most valuable conquests were agreed to be restored, and the East India Company would have been infallibly ruined by a single article of this fallacious and baneful negotiation. No hireling of the minister has been hardy enough to dispute this. Yet the minister himself has made our sovereign declare the satisfaction which he felt at the approaching reestablishment of peace upon conditions so honorable to his crown and so beneficial to his people. As to the entire approbation, that is, approval, of Parliament, which is so vainly boasted of, the world knows how that was obtained. The large debt on the civil list, that is, of people being paid by the government, already above half a year in arrears, shows pretty clear the transactions of the winter. It is, however, remarkable that the minister's speech dwells upon the entire approbation given by Parliament to the preliminary articles, which I will venture to say he must by this time be ashamed of. For he has been brought to confess the total want, that is, lack, of that knowledge, accuracy, and precision by which such immense advantages, both of trade and territory, were sacrificed to our inveterate enemies. These gross blunders are indeed in some measure set right by the definitive treaty. Yet the most important articles relative to cession, commerce, and the Grand Banks cod fishery remain as they are with respect to the French. The proud and feeble Spaniard does not renounce, but only desists from all pretensions which he may have formed to the right of fishing. Where? Only about the Isle of Newfoundland, till a favorable opportunity arises of insisting on it, there as well as elsewhere. The minister cannot forbear, even in the King's speech, insulting us with a dull repetition of the word economy. I did not expect so soon to hear that word again, after it had been so lately exploded, and more than once by a most numerous audience, hissed off the stage of our English theaters. It is held in derision by the voice of the people, and every tongue loudly proclaims the universal contempt in which these empty professions are held by this nation. Let the public be informed of a single instance of economy, except indeed in the household. Lord Ligonier is now no longer at the head of the army, but Lord Bute in effect is. I mean that every preferment given by the crown will be found still to be obtained by his enormous influence and to be bestowed only on creatures of the Scottish faction. The nation is still in the same deplorable state while he governs and can make the tools of his power pursue the same odious measures. Such a retreat as he intends can only mean the personal indemnity, which I hope guilt will never find from an injured nation. The negotiations of the late inglorious peace and the excise will haunt him wherever he goes, and the terrors of the just resentment which he must be sure to meet from a brave and insulted people, and which must finally crush him, will be forever before his eyes. In vain will such a minister preach up in the speech that spirit of concord and that obedience to the laws which is essential to good order. They have sent the spirit of discord through the land, and I will prophesy that it will never be extinguished but by the extinction of their power. Is the spirit of concord to go hand in hand with the peace and excise through this nation? Is it to be expected between an insolent exciseman and a peer, gentleman, freeholder, or farmer whose private houses are now made liable to be entered and searched at pleasure? Gloucestershire, Herefordshire, and in general all the cider counties, that is, Somerset, Dorset, and Devon, are not surely the several counties which are alluded to in the speech. The spirit of concord has not gone forth among them, but a spirit of liberty has, and a noble opposition has been given to the wicked instruments of oppression. A nation as sensible as the English will see that a spirit of concord, when they are oppressed, means a tame submission to injury, and that a spirit of liberty ought then to arise, and I am sure ever will, in proportion to the weight of the grievance they feel. Every legal attempt of a contrary tendency to the spirit of concord will be deemed a justifiable resistance, warranted by the spirit of the English Constitution. A despotic minister will always endeavor to dazzle his prince with high-flown ideas of the prerogative and honor of the crown, which the minister will make a parade of firmly maintaining. I wish, as much as any man in the kingdom, to see the honor of the crown maintained in a manner truly becoming royalty. The Stuart line has ever been intoxicated with the slavish doctrines of the absolute, independent, unlimited power of the crown. Some of that line were so weakly advised as to endeavor to reduce them to practice. But the English nation was too spirited to suffer the least encroachment on the ancient liberties of this kingdom. The King of England is only the first magistrate of this country, but is invested by law with the whole executive power. He is, however, responsible to his people for the due execution of the royal functions, in the choice of ministers, etc., equal to the meanest of his subjects in his particular duty. The personal character of our present amiable sovereign makes us easy and happy that so great a power is lodged in such hands. But the favorite has given too just cause for him to escape the general odium. The prerogative of the crown is to exert the constitutional powers entrusted to it in a way not of blind favor and partiality, but of wisdom and judgment. This is the spirit of our Constitution. The people, too, have their prerogative, and I hope the fine words of Dryden will be engraven on our hearts. Freedom is the English subject's prerogative. This was John Wilkes, Charles Churchill, and others who were editors of the North Briton, talking about opposition to arbitrary power in 1763.